Welcome to Gonkcast, an Autechr podcast. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this is a bonus episode about your emails, and that's it. We decided that after listening to 28 and a half hours of AE Live and moving straight onto the 4 hour long LSEC, we'd cut ourselves some slack and keep this bonus episode simple. So instead of starting with a short discussion about some minor Autechr release as we usually do, we're just going to get straight into your comments. Of course, the other issue is that Autechr just wasn't releasing many odds and ends in this period, probably because they were packaging everything into their increasingly long albums. But I want to emphasize that we're going to circle back around to all kinds of goodies like the Warp tapes, Autechr's remix work, the Japanese bonus tracks, etc., etc., after we finish the main discography. We'll also try to get more creative for the next bonus episode. It's just been a lot lately, I gotta say. Before we get started, I want to remind you that our next proper episode, a week from now, will be on LSEC 1 through 5. Indeed, we are going to try our best to tackle the whole project in one episode. So we want your opinions. GonkcastPod@gmail.com. That email is always in the show notes of every episode, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. All right, Dan, what's our first email?
All right, well, despite what you just said, we're actually going to do a few odds and ends that were recommended to us by listeners. The first is from listener Kevin, who writes, be sure to listen to Psypictics, released after Elevent and before LSEC on the Bleep 10 compilation. It's got it all, a glimmering ambient intro, an absolute funk fest reminiscent of the King of Limbs, an industrial bloodbath third quarter, and the cousin of Altex 9 for a finale, a foreshadow of things to come. So much packed into this masterpiece.
Yeah, I mean, this was an interesting track. I feel like the description here is pretty good, although I don't know if I would go so far as saying like an industrial bloodbath in the third quarter, but it does start out with this really nice, you know, glimmering kind of thing, and then it goes into this weird, like, I want to say it's in 3/4 time, but that feels wrong somehow when I try to count along, and it's like just a very like kind of bouncy, like glass shattering sound. I don't even know how to describe it, but it's like a great groove, even though it's so bizarre. And then it does kind of end in like sort of a weird, like kind of droney territory. What did you think about it?
I thought it was cool. It was like pretty different than, most of their other work, I thought. It did feel like it was in Walt's time or something close to that. I can't think of like any other Autechr thing that's in that same, you know, time signature or whatever it is. But it was really neat. You know, I'm sort of glad it's not on a record. I was trying to think like, you know, what would it fit on? And I really couldn't think of anything that it would fit on well. So, you know, it's a good comp piece, I think.
Yeah, I felt the same way because it doesn't really, it's like almost too weird for, you know, like XI and Elevent, just in the sense of like it is kind of like groovy and almost like cute in a weird way. I mean, that like kind of nice glimmering ambient intro thing like kind of comes back and gives it like a pretty gorgeous, you know, emotionally open and accessible kind of melody to it that's really nice. But that would feel really weird on XI or Elevent. And then it's not nearly noisy enough at all to be, you know, in like AE Live or LSEC territory. Honestly, it almost made me think of like the NTS sessions a little bit more than anything else, just because it was kind of groovy, but like still very off kilter and strange.
Yeah, I agree. And like the NTS session, I mean, we'll get to it, but there's more openness of like what fits into that, I think.
That's true. That's a good point. All right. So thank you for that recommendation. The next one was recommended by listener Mike, and it's called Piob Mix 2. It's an alternate ambient mix of the track Piob Mix from the Garbage EP, released as the B-side of this random promo 7-inch that went out with a 1996 issue of a German magazine called What's That Noise? Apparently, this is very, very rare and hard to get a hold of nowadays. The A-side has a live track by The Fall and a dub version of a track by Drome. So what did you think of this?
It was cool. And in fact, that a couple years ago, I like went and tried to find like every Autechr thing that's been released that I had never heard. And this is one I could never find on like Soulseek or anything. I generally don't listen to music on YouTube because bit rate's bad. But, you know, don't get me started. But I thought it was really cool, you know, just a real like sort of ambient, you know, stretched out like take on the song.
Yeah, I mean, totally weird because it doesn't sound anything like the original Piob Mix. Like I went back just to like check. So I was like, this doesn't remind me of Piob Mix. And it has this kind of like delayed, like kind of sound like running over the background, which Pyomix does have, but Pyomix has like a bunch of delayed sounds, like almost like tabla drum style thing. And then it's got like a really weird kind of spooky minor melody. I don't know if they just like maybe transposed the chord progression or something, like slowed it down and turned it into a major chord progression or something. You know, you can imagine that being possible even with Amber era equipment, but it becomes like really just beautiful and pretty. I mean, it's like full-blown Selected Ambient Works 2 territory, you know?
Yeah, it did sound like Selected Ambient Works. I didn't think of that. Yeah, I mean, it was neat, you know? It used like some of the same, you know, pieces of Pyob, but yeah, it was fairly different. I thought it was cool how it was like sort of a major, you know, sounding chords or whatever, because you know, usually when things get ambient or, you know, drone, oftentimes, you know, it gets spooky or whatever. So it was nice to like have that, but kind of the opposite way than normal.
Yeah, I mean, I really loved it. I feel like if it was on Selected Ambient Works 2 for some reason, it would be like one of my favorite tracks on that like fantastic album. But it just kind of makes you like wonder, like, there, you know, because all the tracks on like the Garbage EP are called something mix, you know, and it's like, I wonder if there's other mixes of those tracks that are just like sitting in the vaults or something. Same thing actually with the track we just talked about, the Siptext or whatever. It's like, if that's just one of these little outtakes that they never release because it never fit on anything, it just makes you, you know, God, there must be all this awesome stuff that they just never released.
Yeah, now can't wait for the Ottecker bootleg series, you know?
Yes, yes.
All right, well, last is an unofficial music video for Gantz Graf recommended to us by listener TF. It's titled Ottecker and the Washing Machine.
Yeah, let me stop you right there. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. Just pause this right now and just go watch it before we ruin it. Just right now, pause. Okay, what did you think of this music video?
I like when you sent it to me, you just said exactly what we said. And so I thought, you know, oh, somebody, you know, we watched that other like unofficial video. I forget what song it was for. So I thought it was just another thing like that. And honestly, I was thinking, oh, really? You know, the Gantz Graf video is so good.
I know.
But this is just someone throwing like a cinder block or something like into a washing machine and it destroying itself to Gantz Graf. And it's pretty great.
I know this listener who recommended this. That's all they said was it was an unofficial music video, and I was thinking like, this is gonna suck. Like, why would you make an unofficial music video for like one of the most iconic music videos? And then just like the surprise of watching it was just an absolute delight, and it works so perfectly. Like it's like exactly what you would imagine. yeah, like what you would imagine the sound of this like washing machine destroying itself, especially at the end, you know, like when basically like the front cover rips off.
Yeah.
And like the inside motor thing is just completely destroyed. I mean, it works with the music perfectly.
Yeah. It's funny. I had seen like the original video, washing machine video before, you know, like it was some old YouTube video, but it lines up like, so it's like, you know, listening to Dark Side of the Moon and watching Wizard of Oz or something.
Yes. Perfect. I mean, chef's kiss on this. I can't recommend it highly enough. All right, let's move on to some AE Live comments. First, I just want to read this comment from listener Jordan, who writes, I can't believe you guys actually listened to all 28 AE Live sets in a week. What is wrong with you guys? I don't know about you, but it's like for me, I basically, you know, I work from home, like I know a lot of people do nowadays, but I just have music playing unless I'm like watching a movie or like playing video games or something. Like it is just playing all the time. So sometimes like preparing for the show is tough some weeks because there's like I'm doing all the research I can. And we're like meticulously setting up this doc and like bringing in all these listener emails. But like just listening to music is never a struggle for me, you know?
Yeah, same for me. I'm back in the office, but I have my own office. So I just sit and listen to music all day as well. So, you know, got a solid 7-8 hours to listen to things. You know, the 28 hours of AE Live, I did it in a week. So, you know, that was a little more difficult. Because normally I mix in, you know, other things I want to listen to, not just Odd Tucker, but I had to do without for most of that week.
Yeah, yeah, same. We also got a YouTube comment from listener Ragnvald, who says, "Yep, it's exhausting stuff of AE Live. I've chopped loads of them up on Audacity, so they're more bite-sized for my little portable music player. Always happy when they come on when I'm in Tesco trying to do a food shop or something. If you can deal with that craziness in your head whilst trying to concentrate, you'll become masterful at stoicism." I've actually seen a lot of similar comments from people who have like split AE Live into tracks, and I wondered what you think about that, Dan. Does it feel like wrong in some way to do that?
Yeah, I saw somebody like commented on the Odd Tucker Reddit and said that they had done that too. I think if you're splitting it up, it sort of seems like you're not listening to the whole thing at once, which
yeah,
kind of seems outside of the point of like a live record. But also, I've talked about it before, I'm a real dick about like listening to albums completely and stuff. So I guess it would be nice if they were split up, you know, by the band with track titles. Just it would make talking about it quite a bit easier. So I guess there's nothing like wrong with it, but I sure so wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, what I came to realize after listening to it so much those past 2 weeks was like, it just doesn't divide very neatly, I don't think. Like, basically, if I were to split it up and give some title or something, you know, because they're kind of like just reassembling sounds like in different ways all the time. So I would have to have like a track called, you know, Tuba Funk, and then Tuba Funk Reprise, and then Tuba Funk Reprise 2. You know, it's just like not clear, distinct tracks all the way through.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah, that's perfect.
The other thing I kind of realized is like, you know, we'll talk about this more next time, but some tracks from AE Live pop up on LSEC, right? And, you know, you notice that they're pretty fucking long, right? Like they're, you know, like they're, what is it, C16 Deep Tread or whatever. It's like 15 minutes long. And so if you were like, that's them dividing the track up. So if you were to divide AE Live into tracks, you'd have to divide it into what, 4 15-minute tracks?
Yeah, I guess. I think it's just it's too hard because, you know, the set's not the same every time, and there's just not like, I mean, some of the earlier like European shows have like a clear delineation between pieces, but I feel like, you know, once you get deep into the US tour, that kind of goes away quite a bit, and it just seems really hard.
Yeah, it just feels like if they did divide it up, it wouldn't be helpful because it would still be really long tracks. Here's a related comment from listener Marius, also on YouTube. I'd have preferred just a single release gathering together the best takes of each live set section into one seamless best of Monster Live compilation. I want to ask what you think about that, because, you know, as I was thinking about it, it's like, that's kind of the more common live album, you know, where it's like they've done a tour and they pick like their favorite performances of each song and sort of like reassemble the set list. And, you know, you got to think that like Odd Tucker, they probably stuck to similar tempos in a way where they could like get real perfectionist about it and splice it together into like the super cut. What would you think about that?
Yeah, I'm sure they could, you know, and that is like the, you know, pretty typical, you know, big act live album kind of thing. I don't know. It's nice. It would be nice for the like more casual fan to just say like, this is our live album. You know, this is, you only have to listen to one thing. But I think I mentioned it on the AE Live show. I kind of like that they released them all because, you know, if you went to the, you know, New York show, you could listen to that one, which, you know, but if you went to like a different one, you can't, you know, because like real live albums, you know, normal, you know, cut up ones, they typically, you know, a band will play 3 shows in New York or something and it's cut from those. It's usually in a bigger city or something, you know, so it's nice to be, you know, if you were somebody in, you know, Portland or some, you know, some of these non-New York or Chicago, LA kind of cities, I mean, Orlando, I went to the Orlando show, and it's not too often that you get a live album recorded in Orlando, you know, so I like that. I just think, you know, I like the availability of the stuff. Like, you don't have to listen to it. You can just pick one, you can just pick two, or you can check them all out. You know, I sort of like the do-it-yourself kind of attitude of it.
I do too, but, you know, I was thinking, like, if they did that, I wouldn't say no, and I feel like in that case, you want both. Like, release the supercut and then give us the whole tour as well. You know, that's kind of like Isn't that there's like a Bob Dylan bootleg series of the Rolling Thunder review, and it's like assembled in that way, but then more recently they released like sort of the whole thing, and it's nice to have both, actually. Like, sometimes you're in the mood for one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and they released those like 10 or so years apart from each other, you know, but yeah, I agree, because, you know, the casual fan can just check out, you know, the collage, but, you know, if you want to get deep into it, you can explore the entire or most of the tour.
Yeah. All right. What's next?
All right. Another AE Live YouTube comment from a listener, Ellen, who writes, "The reference to free jazz is really interesting, and I think a valid comparison with something like Coltrane's Ascension might be valid." I read that wrong.
Yeah. I was thinking about this because, honestly, it's an interesting comparison, because I feel like Ascension especially, but a lot of free jazz in general, it's got sort of like a communal spirit to it. You know, it's more of like your turn now to like go wild, and now it's your turn to go wild. And it's kind of like a drum circle sort of an approach to ripping through this thing. But it does have the same like just sonic destructive quality as Ascension. I also found myself thinking a lot about Peter Brotzman's Machine Gun while listening to AE Live. And what do you think about these comparisons?
Yeah, I agree with you with the, you know, like Ascension and stuff. It is like such a communal thing, I especially, you know, like late period Coltrane and Pharoah Sanders and all that, you know, stuff really has that communal feel. But I, you know, one thing with Ascension, you know how there's this whole thing of like there was one take released and then change, you know, later pressings are a different take. You know, that sort of fits with AE Live in the sense that like both of those takes are the same song, or, you know, the same hour long piece, or, you know, about so. But, you know, things are different in it. In Ascension's case, you know, the solos are slightly different. You know, some people don't take a solo in one or the other and whatnot. But, you know, that sort of is similar to what they do in AE Live with like the jamming section. You know, it's not quite the same thing, but I get the similarity, and like sonically, it definitely has that like destruction you know, of music that the free jazz has. I think Machine Gun is probably a closer representation, though.
Yeah, it's just kind of like a similar scorched earth quality, where I feel like if you were a newcomer and you just put on AE Live, you would have kind of the same reaction as if you were a newcomer and just put on Ascension or Machine Gun for the first time. All right, here's one from listener Steve, who says, "Recently on long drives, I've tried to get through all of XI in one sitting, and I can't. If I listen in pieces, it's much more enjoyable. A double album is tough. I find myself thinking, why didn't they simply release all of my favorite tracks on one disc, except that the best tracks legitimately vary with each listener." This got me wondering, can you imagine a single disc XI, Dan? And like, what would it look like? Not that you have to pick exactly, but does anything jump to mind?
You know, I don't have the track list in front of me, so I won't give you names, but I don't know. I really like the hugeness of it. But then again, you know, we talked about how the band thought of it as like 3, you know, 12 inches or whatever. So I guess it makes sense to, you know, kind of make your own. And, you know, you could make a playlist of, you know, a single disc XI for yourself. But I don't know. I always feel like you wouldn't take a painting and be like, oh, I just like this part of it and cut that out. You know what I mean? Like, that sounds pretentious and whatever, but like that's how I feel about records. I yell at my, or I don't yell at her, but you know what I mean? My wife, like, when she tries to skip a song on a record or something in the car, and even if I don't like the song, I just still, it's like, I my argument is always like, you wouldn't fast forward a movie because you don't like this part, you know, like you would just sit through it. You'd sit through it and then watch the rest of the movie. That's just how I feel about it. You know, that's probably not the common way. It might not even be the way the artists themselves, you know, thinks of it. But that's how I feel.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's got like a slight mix and match quality to it, you know, not just how they sort of presented it as like separate 12 inches, but, you know, I mentioned like listening on shuffle and just how well actually everything transitioned into each other and stuff. And I don't know what it would look like exactly, but I do feel like I could make an absolutely killer single disc version of XI. I wouldn't like it as much as the full thing because I do like the just overwhelming size of the thing, but I feel like it would slap.
Yeah, I mean, if Onteka released XI and it was only a single disc worth of that stuff, I mean, there's no track I hate on that, so I would definitely like the album, you know. If I had the choice, I would take more is better.
Yeah. On that note, actually, Steve also said the clear standout for me was Vecco S. It has a great groove, and I find myself nodding my head through most of it. I was surprised to hear it's one of Gabe's least favorites from the album. I wanted to bring this up because I forgot to mention the thing I actually hate most about Vecco S, which is, like, you know, at the end, how there's this kind of whirring sound that, like, builds up, and it sounds like my laptop fan is, like, going crazy. And that is one of, like, my biggest pet peeves in life, is, like, when I'm trying to listen to music and my fucking laptop fan is, like, just blasting. And whenever it starts to happen, like, I'll just straight up, like, restart my computer because it pisses me off so much. And I know it's not my laptop, but it triggers me, like, in this involuntary fury when that sound happens. Do you relate to me at all on this?
No, I very rarely listen to music on my laptop. So
no, I mean, even when I'm, like, when I've just got my speaker set up here, like, oh, it's plugged into my laptop just starts, like, going, like, and I'm like, oh my god,
maybe get a better laptop.
Yeah, maybe. One last thing from Steve. He says, I tried listening to Steely Dan at your suggestion. Some of it is okay, similar to Pink Floyd, but I can't get through most of their songs, so I'm definitely not a fan. Is the theory debunked?
I mean, that's how I felt at first. You know, in fact, I hate Pink Floyd a lot, and I always sort of, like, grouped them in the Pink Floyd, fan base kind of thing, but... you know, I don't know what he listened to, because the first time I listened to Asia, I was like, this is too polished, and I really did kind of hate it. It took Can't Buy a Thrill, which is more it's more dirty to get me in and get acquainted. I worked my way up to Asia. I went in chronological order, and I worked my way in there. So I say, Steve, keep on trying.
Yeah, there we go. All right, what's next?
All right, listener Joe says, you mentioned having no idea how they got from the sounds of Oversteps to the sounds of XI, and that the post-Oversteps live shows must be the missing link. I think that the missing link is pretty clearly Move of 10. Several tracks sound like prototype versions of XI tracks. Move of 10 has that blown-out percussion sound much more than Oversteps does, and it's one of the reasons I called Move of 10 the 2010s version of Incunabula in a previous email. With Oversteps being the 2010s Amber and the XI the 2010s Trirepite, both Move of 10 and Incunabula were collections of tracks from their respective eras rather than conceived albums, and each introduced a wide range of elements that would be perfected later. Both Oversteps and Amber are more melody focused and cohesive, and both XI and Trirepite perfect those already introduced elements while combining them with completely new ideas as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's an intriguing thought, especially that last part. But, you know, I was kind of, like, revisiting Move of 10 after getting this email and just feeling like there's something about it that is still just so different from XI. You know, like, the sort of hyper clean, like, super FM synthesis quality of Oversteps is still very present, I think, on Move of 10. And it's true that Move of 10 has, like, more grooving to it, which I think is sort of a staple part of XI. And, you know, I cut some examples that Joe gave just to, like, make the email a little shorter, but he mentions, like, Rue 1 as something that could fit on XI. And I can totally hear it, except for the fact that it's not, like, dirty enough. It's not scuzzy enough. I feel like if Rue 1 was on XI, they would have, like, messed it up and made the, like, sheer noisiness of it the centerpiece of the track instead of the groove. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, Move of 10 is, like, a step away from Oversteps, but, you know, it hasn't quite, like, crossed the bridge yet. You know, there, I think there's still that, like, middle missing link, and Move of 10 just isn't it.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, Move of 10 just feels like, what if Oversteps was fun and, like, less of, like, a you know, step toward XI or something. It just feels like a lateral move away from Oversteps, but not necessarily toward XI. But it is an interesting thought. And here's an interesting YouTube comment from listener Rainer D, who says he's in the middle of exploring the discography and writes, Autechre fans seem to have extremely divergent views on what is good and what is bad. I find so far that I rarely like an album in its entirety or even half of it, but that what stands out for me, I must have copied this wrong, but what stands out for me is usually the best electronic music out there for that time period. Autechre's constant experimentation and drive to innovate has probably led their releases to be a bit uneven, but then again, it also led to LSEC and NTS, which are probably my favorites, along with the 2016-18 AE Live. Kind of got me thinking, do you think Autechre could be described as an uneven act?
I think a lot of people would probably use that description because, you know, we've talked about it. Like, so many people love, you know, just early Autechre or even just middle period or, you know, today's kind of thing. And so I think, like, those people would probably consider them a bit uneven. As far as, like, records inside of records themselves, you know, like, not all the tracks being good, I disagree. I usually find myself, if I like a record from them, I usually kind of find it hard to point out a track I really dislike or something, you know. It's the albums that I already, you know, like the album as a whole are less of my favorites that I can sort of pinpoint things I would cut or something, you know. So I personally, I wouldn't call them uneven, but I wouldn't fault somebody for thinking that way.
Yeah, I think that's how I feel, because instinctively, like, when I read this, I was like, I think of Autechre as one of those rare bands where, like, everything is good. Like, they have so many, like, absolutely, you know, I'm not even trying to fanboy, just like albums that are, like, worth listening to in full. Absolutely is, like, the name of the game with Autechre. And yet I also think that it's fair that, like, when you know, like, one of the hardest parts of this podcast is trying to, like, describe the overall sound of an Autechre album, like, to try to characterize it in, like, a couple words, because it's actually pretty diverse, you know, and I find myself often, like, I'll be listening to an Autechre album and I'm like, okay, I get what this is all about. And then there's always, like, a track where I'm like, well, what's all this then? Like, now what are they doing? And that'll happen, like, two or three times per album. So I can 100% understand if somebody likes some kind of style more than others, you know, feeling like it's totally uneven.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So I was just thinking of, like, just as an example, like LP5, which I think is one of those albums that does have, like, a pretty distinct, like, clear sound, you know, not like a huge diversity of sounds. And yet, you know, you listen to Acre Year 2, the first track, and you're like, okay, all right, I see what they're doing. They're going, like, digital laser disc style up in here. And then you get to 777 and it's like this weird, like, wubbing, you know, like, sound, and you're like, what's going on, you know? And then it's like back to Ray and you're like, okay, I think I remember this, but I don't know what that just was. So yeah, I mean, I totally get it. I also wanted to say that, like, I feel like Autechre is one of those groups where, like, even when I feel like they miss, which is rare, it's still super interesting to hear what they've, you know, they're doing, you know, even though it's, like, not my favorite thing.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. I mean, as we rank our records, you know, Draft is my least favorite so far. I would never say I hate Draft or anything. Like, I think it's very interesting and everything. It's just not my favorite record or one that I, you know, want to go back to all the time.
Yeah. Never uninteresting. No. For sure. What's next?
All right, here's an email from listener Alex, who comments on Autechre's era of massive data dumps, saying, don't forget that the Flaming Lips pushed the envelope first with their two mega releases, I Found a Star on the Ground, a single six-hour song, and Seven Skies H3, their 24-hour song. I know it's debatable how intentional or song-like either of these actually is, and the Star is clearly more of a promotional gimmick than anything else, but in terms of embracing the freedom of non-traditional physical media, I feel like the Lips broke ground. But also, the coda here is that they did release these physically, in the latter instance in the form of a physical hard drive inside a human skull. I know this isn't a Lips podcast, but I can't help but highlight it. Makes the 12 record NTS box set look tame, doesn't it? I'll say that, and this is Dan speaking now, no more email. I hate the Flaming Lips, and I hate this gimmick stuff, and I know you put this in here to get me riled up, but I remember when that 24-hour song came out. I remember your brother was always trying to get through it and stuff. It's fucking, that's such a gimmick thing. It's like Kiss level gimmickry. I hate it. I hate it so much. They're like, they're the pinnacle of record store day band.
Yeah. I mean, I love the Flaming Lips. And yeah, I did mostly want to bring this up to rile you up, but I was kind of thinking, like, we'll talk about this more, you know, once we get to LSEC and NTS and stuff. But You know, do you feel like when you think back to this era of like the 2010s, did you have a sense that like, you know, the shape of albums was changing, you know, that like people were getting into, like even before Autechre and stuff, like, you know, getting into really long releases and stuff?
No, not really. You know, I always felt like, you know, there was sometimes the gimmick thing, you know, somebody releasing, you know, a thumb drive or something, but it always, yeah, it always seemed like a gimmick, and it never felt like, oh, we're moving away from, you know, traditional media. It literally just always felt like, you know, some sort of gimmick. I think like Autechre and everything, like there's feels like an embrace of like a new technology. You know, it doesn't feel like gimmicky that LSEC is 4 hours long. It just, that's just what it is. And it doesn't feel gimmicky that NTS is 12 records because it was, you know, 4 2-hour radio show. Like there's a reason that it is its length. It's never like, oh, you know what, man, let's stick it in a human skull. Like there's none of that, you know, like there's none of that. And what's this new, I'm gonna sound like a boomer now, but this new like non-fungible token thing,
yeah,
garbage gimmick. I've retweeted some, but I've seen a lot of people like praying Autechre doesn't do it because Aphex Twin just did it. And I'm in there. I'm with you. Pray they don't do it. I was thinking, fucking stupid.
I was thinking it's completely lame. Unless Autechre does it, then it's cool. That's my official position. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was just like thinking about this email a little bit and just thinking back to this era. And like, you know, what I remember is there was a lot of panic about, is sort of the digital era gonna end the album, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like, people are just gonna do singles because like, why bother making an album? And then what actually happened was like, the album was just fine. Like people were totally still focused on making albums and still are. I mean, what you see, I guess, over the course of the 2010s is like albums sort of shift in shape a little bit. Like you start to see really short albums, like from Earl Sweatshirt or like that Kanye West, you know, like a Wyoming thing or whatever. But like, and then you start to see some really long albums. Like I think the first one that really blew my mind was LSEC. But it's just interesting that people still seem to be focused on like making larger projects, sometimes so large that they only come in like chrome dipped human skulls, but you know, they were still interested in the idea of like creating a big project, which is kind of neat.
I think it's because, you know, like a band or an artist, you know, that's not just some, you know, corporate, you know, radio thing, like they're artists, and I think like they want to create like a piece of work, you know. I feel like making an individual song or, you know, two songs for a single or something is like such a different, you know, process. Like even back in the 60s, like with the Beatles, like, you know, the single songs like sort of felt like more, you know, lightweight or not, you know, the same, you know, kind of like massive thing as a whole record. And I think people just like still feel that way, you know, like maybe, you know, your big, you know, kind of Grammy artists, maybe they lean more in the, you know, single kind of world, but then not really, because like, Taylor Swift released 2 albums, you know, last year.
Yeah.
I think there's just, as long as there's some money in it, the, you know, the big guys are going to do it. And I think the little guys are always going to do it because it's just the way to, you know, make art. And I do think the thing is, like you said, like, you know, there's these shorter albums, you know, like when the CD first came out, they felt like they had to fill up 90 minutes,
right?
You know, like rap albums were so overblown, all these like jazz reissues like got saddled with tons of bonus tracks and stuff.
Yeah.
But like people, you know, finally like found their groove. And I think now with streaming, you can go, you know, there's no one's going to feel cheated. Like if you bought a CD for $20 and it's 30 minutes, or you buy another CD for $20 and it's an hour, you know, you feel a little cheated, right, with the shorter one. But on streaming, I paid, you know, $9.99 a month for Spotify, whether I listen to 800 hours or 30 minutes, you know, all month. It just kind of like, I think it really like made that not matter anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. It's interesting. Something we'll return to, but, I know Dan doesn't agree with me, but shout out to Flaming Lips for stretching the form as far as it could go. All right. Last but not least, listener Tyler sent us a YouTube video titled "Autechre Albums Portrayed by SpongeBob." I will also put the link to this in the show notes. But what did you think, Dan?
It made me feel really old because one, I've never like actually watched SpongeBob. So I feel like I didn't completely understand it, and I felt like a boomer. It was sort of funny, though.
I thought it was very funny. Like each one is like almost more perfect than the last. Like I particularly like when he's like protesting or something, which is the anti-EP.
Yeah, that's funny.
And then like some robot is like rapping or something for Envain. And then the NTS one was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, another chef's kiss for me. It was really, really a work of art.
Yeah. Maybe I'll get a child to explain it to me or something. All right. If you've got any Autechre opinions or hot takes to share, we want to hear them. Send them gonkcastpod@gmail.com. That includes funny Autechre meme videos. next episode in a week, LSEC 1-5. Again, send us your thoughts on that. gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts and look us up on YouTube. Stay connected, Twitter, Instagram. Those are @GonkCastPod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.